welcome to Minute 18 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and Tom is still in the cooler. He will be back hopefully next week if Von Luger lets him out. And joining me today is Todd now once again of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So Minute 18 starts off with the words Valinsky. The continuation of the sentence that we got cut off on yesterday with Strachwitz talking, and it goes all the way until here I say similar, which we'll have to find out what that means a little later on. This minute continues the scene from yesterday where Sedgwick and Danny are trying to escape from the prison by pretending to be Russian or pretending to be very badly pretending to be Russian prisoners. Funny the way that she knows what he's dealing with here, which is and now we understand also that Strachwitz not only understands German and English, but he also understands Russian, because I wouldn't know what Tavarich means if someone said that to me.
No, I only know one thing in Russian. We talked about that last time. Я вас. And even that was wrong, so, yeah.
What bloody good is that going to do you, Todd?
Well.
Yeah. Strachwitz throws Cedric out of the line and takes off Danny's cap and surprisingly knows to which prisoner to put the cap on.
Yes. I mean, well.
Because you have the prisoner behind and the prisoner in front, so which neither of them have hats on, so it could be, you never know.
Hats in this culture are an identifying person. They are unique to that particular Russian prisoner. It's like how I've heard in the Star Wars universe, and Raider, each sand person has their own bantha, which is particularly matched to them. It's the same way with Russian prisoners and their furry hats, I guess.
Oh, all right. Well, when we have Alex on in a few weeks, we'll have to ask him if that's true. You never know. And then obviously Danny takes off his jacket. He seems to be a little little frustrated about it.
And why? Why does he take off the jacket? I mean, they're in a prison camp, and they're scrounging for every resource they can. Keep the jacket, man.
Yeah, but
it's going to come in
especially
handy.
Especially since he paid for it.
Yeah.
He paid for it with a cigarette. Why not? You're right. That's definitely true, but he seems a little frustrated that he has to get rid of it. And hear that he actually knows more Russian because he says thank you. He says spasibo. So I guess Danny was lying to Sedgwick.
He was lying to him. You can't trust him, man.
We can already count that he knows five other Russian words.
And they make this guy a key part of the plan later on? Oh, boy. We got to reconsider this.
Apparently. So the Russians start moving out, and then it's very interesting. I've never noticed this, but it makes sense when you know what's going to happen. But he actually, Strachwitz, lets all the Russian prisoners walk by, and at one point he grabs a pitchfork from one of them. Which, had you ever noticed this before? When you've seen this?
I have, yeah, because at first when it happens, I always think, well, what's he just, he likes to collect pitchforks or something like that? At first it seems a little weird, but it does pay off later.
Of course, but now when I saw it this time, I thought he was actually lowering the pitchfork. Trying to, okay, you're holding it up too high. That type of thing. That's what it seemed like to me.
Well, that is a good point. That Russian guy is holding it in kind of an unsafe way. I mean, if the guy isn't paying attention for a moment, gets distracted, like out of the corner of his eye, he sees Steve McQueen playing with his baseball or something like that. He's distracted. He turns and look. Next thing you know, he's got a pitchfork in the forehead. That's not a good thing.
Oh, pitchfork in the forehead is better than pitchfork in the eye. It depends what velocity he hit it. Because a pitchfork,
in the
temple isn't going to be that great. If
we'll do a special bonus episode to talk about the angle of the pitchfork and the velocity and would it really cause that much damage, et cetera.
And also, how sharp is the pitchfork? Did they make all of the tools that the Russians use they normally should be in order?
Probably
to,
do.
Is it dull? I don't know.
Right. Do they put a cork on the pitchfork, so they don't hurt themselves? Yeah.
Well. No, well, the cork we don't see there. So that I'm gonna have to take that one away.
Why is the cork on the fork?
Yeah. You had a few good ideas the last 2 days. Exactly. All right. Then the scene switches over and we see Von Luger exiting his office. looking at everyone, looking at what's going on. He's got a big smile on his face, too.
Well, this is his moment. This is the obligatory Russian commander walks on the porch scene. War movies always have the Russian general walking on the porch scene. It's the way he shows that he's important.
That's a good point. And I think in Bridge on the River Kwai, I think you also have some scenes with Saito way also.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. No, I never thought about that fact.
Bad guys love to walk on the porch.
And he puts on one glove. His other glove is already there. You know, he's about to go play golf.
Well, that's where Michael Jackson got it from. That you didn't know that? The one glove thing. Yeah, no, Michael Jackson was a huge fan of The Great Escape, and he saw one glove and he went, "Yeah, that's for me." No, I'm kidding, of course.
Of course you're kidding. Great insight. Yeah, it's possible. And then after that quick shot, we once again see the trees as the trees are going, the truck with the trees to the front gate, and Strachwitz walks over, and now we actually see the pitchfork in his hand. Which, like I said, I've noticed that he has the pitchfork in the past, but I never noticed where he got the pitchfork from, because it's really just a fraction of a second when he's taking it from him.
Well, and I was going to say, as he walks up to the trucks here, one thing that bugged me is that, and I realized the branches got jostled around. There were guys climbing into them and such, but I was thinking they're pretty precariously stacked on there, and it's not like there's paved roads out there. I'm thinking those branches are going to end up falling off by the time the truck gets, like 50 yards outside of the gates.
Oh, that's very true. Dude, I didn't even think about that, but that's very true. And it also makes you wonder why. I mean, we know that they cut down the trees. You can see in an early, I think last week we discussed it, that when Hiltz is walking around, you see a lot of tree stumps on the ground. So they're just finishing up. These are finishing touches right before everything really finishes here, before they finish the camp.
They got to get rid of the places to hide. It actually, I mean, I'm not kidding at all. It makes perfect sense. They're eliminating the camp where, if someone were to make it past the fence where they could hide,
Right, exactly. And I mean, one of the things that I found interesting here is discussing yesterday about possibly when and where this was, when this all takes place. It's very possible that this actually takes place in December. Maybe that's the reason why they wanted all the trees.
Now, there you go. The Christmas party is coming up, so they got to get the trees, And these guys, they're trying to escape, and they don't even realize that Santa Claus is going to come. He's going to bring some goodies in his bag, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, and we'll see what Strachwitz's present is. He gets Ives. But I love Tom and I have discussed in previous music here, but in the whole movie.
Oh,
but yes, this scene, the music is great because you get a musical tone for each time that he jabs the pitchfork into the trees. There's a dun, dun.
They don't score movies like this anymore. I mean,
No, not at all.
Those moments where every little hit is scored. What it made me watching this is actually two things that are connected. Do you remember the movie The Cable Guy?
Yes.
Where they do the Mideast sequence, which itself is parodying an episode of Star Trek where Kirk and Spock are forced to fight each other. And in that Cable Guy scene, Jim Carrey is doing the soundtrack of the Star Trek episode. He's like humming and singing the music of that Star Trek, which has all these hits, every time that he thrusts the weapon. And it's that same type of thing. The music is actually very similar here, that every time it's the stack of tree branches with the pitchfork, you get this, it goes in there. It's wonderful.
Oh, that is great. I'll have to.
It's
I haven't
a little
seen
bit
that
like the
years.
Shower sequence in Psycho too. Like every stab.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean Bernstein does a great job here. And, if we've got someone lined up. One of the final weeks of this podcast, she's a music expert who's going to discuss about the music. I mean, one of the things is that Bernstein was able to create subscores for every one of the characters. Now I don't know if that's true or not. Mm. I'm not enough of a music expert to be able to answer that would be very interesting. But I mean, this just shows, it shows the talent that able to put in musical notes at the point when he's stabbing, you know, into, because we don't know that we only saw the two other guys jump in.
Yeah, and I think we said we weren't sure exactly who jumped off the roof in there. I always assumed one of them was Ives, but I don't know.
And we saw Danny climb in at one point, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay.
No, but yeah, Ives is the only one in this truck. The other two guys jump into the same truck.
Unless there was another guy in there who actually did get stabbed when he shoved the pitchfork in there and killed him instantly, and so he never came out, you know? I mean...
No, that could be. That could be. That's definitely true. I'll have to keep that in mind. We'll have to keep watching. Maybe we'll be able to see them drag off the body at some point.
A moment of silence, please, for the unnamed guy that jumped in with Ives, who got stabbed, dramatic music cue, and was never heard from again.
Maybe it's Merivale who doesn't show up in the movie at all.
There you go.
Now we know why. Now Ives stands up. Hold it. And then he stands up, and you know, you can tell how short he is because of the way he's standing up. He's not towering over Strachwitz, who's standing on the ground. I just love the fact that he still has his shoes around his neck. He's like, I'm keeping these.
Ives is one of my favorite characters of the whole thing.
These are going with me no matter where I go. I'm taking my running shoes or whatever they seem to be. Mm-hmm. And then Strachwitz says, at this point, you can see that Strachwitz no longer has the pitchfork in his hands. He's left it in the bundle of trees. What does he take out? He pulls out what we discussed yesterday, what he has sticking out of his shirt. Tom mentioned to me that he found it really interesting that he's carrying around a yearbook, because it seems like a camp yearbook. You know, it's just, you know, it's the dossiers on every single one of theirs. But how do you get so many to that? Because you know, if there's 600 prisoners in the camp or something like that, you know, do they only have like the, you know, top billed stars? You know,
well, they clubs, you know, they've got, you know, the camp football team and the camp band and, you know, the cheerleading squad and all that, you know, and then they divide each page up, you know, so there's a little room for a picture, little short bio, you know, what activities they were involved in and where they're planning on going to school. You need a couple of pages in there so they can write on there, you know, thanks for a great war, see you on the next one, you know, something like that.
Exactly. And so then Strachwitz asks for it. Just his name, meaning we already know that where this is going. Just tell me who you are, you know. And he goes, Ives. He goes, yes, Ives. Now, again, the you know, he's able to flip through pretty quickly and find Ives in there. You can see that they have a picture of every one of them in this yearbook that we've already mentioned. You know, the Tom's way of mentioning this is calling it a yearbook. I never would have thought of calling it a yearbook, so that's definitely, it makes sense that that's a yearbook.
Yeah.
They got, as you said, they got pictures of everybody so that they know where they should be, their names and stuff like that. And he goes, oh yes, Archibald Ives, Scott, which in the original script, he was a New Zealander. They, you know, I guess once they got, you know, once they cast the actor, they decided to change it, because, you know, when you have someone like Angus Lenny, I don't think he can really pull it off as a New Zealander. So let's just make him a Scott.
Well, you come from Australia. I mean, come on.
But he's, because he's American. He can, you know,
American can do anything. Got it.
Exactly. And your photograph doesn't do you any justice. What the hell does that mean?
I was just thinking. I'm like, is this supposed to be
whose mugshot makes them? It, you know, gives them justice. I mean, Nick Nolte. Mel Gibson, you know.
Well, the whole exchange is a little weird, because I'm thinking that'd be an insult, because he says the photo doesn't do you justice, which I'm thinking, to me, I would interpret as saying you're much handsomer than your photograph is. Ives responds by saying, I'd like to see you under similar circumstances, yeah. You know, and I'm thinking, wait a second, he just paid you a compliment. He said that you look better than your photograph. So... you know, the two should have been buds at that point, you know? I don't know.
Exactly. There's definitely. And I love how when I was just talking, he takes out his hat. You know, he pulls out his hat from he's holding it on his hand, takes his hat, and is about to put it on his head. All right. Do you have anything else for this minute?
I think we covered it.
All right. So why don't you once again tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. The blog is Forgotten Films. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. The podcast, The Forgotten Films, on pretty much anywhere you find podcasts. And follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. It's films with a Z.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can come rate and review and subscribe us on any podcatcher that you're using. You can come and talk to us on our Facebook group, The Cooler, which, again, Tom is still there for another few days. He can respond to you probably quicker than any of the rest of us. And you can contact us on Twitter via Great Escape MXM. Our website's .com. And our email is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.